we think there's a way to have this like interesting micro flywheels to have a more sustainable income stream for creators, yeah, kind of using this underlying technology and having, in this case, then the creators are basically activating their fans. And that might be a more scaled way for if we provide that infrastructure to get even more people into this ecosystem.
All right, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. What is up? I am your host, Charlie Schrem, and you're listening to another epic episode of The Charlie Schrem Show, where twice a week together, powered by Waxman, we get to dive deep with some of crypto's most influential leaders, Bitcoin OGs, those who are leading the laboratories, those who are building some crazy things. Wow, like you guys are in for such a treat today because we have a great guest and I'm going to introduce in a second. I hope everyone's having a good week. I hope everyone's been getting through the winter season so far, interest rates, the whole macro environment. I saw a great chart today. It's like our crypto land and what we're doing and building and growing. For some reason, that narrative was put together that we need to exist within this like better macro environment. But that was never the case until COVID. No one cared about interest rates as it related to Bitcoin and crypto and the things that we're doing before 2020. So why are we still clinging to that narrative? So let's move away from that. Let's focus on some of the fun things that we're doing and cool things that are being built. I'm really excited to have on the show today, Melody Hildenbrandt. Melody, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm really glad to be here.
Melody, you're the Chief Information Security Officer at Fox and President of its Blockchain Creative Labs. How cool is that, that Fox has Blockchain Creative Labs? Like that, can we just pause for a moment and just be really excited that this Bitcoin thing that we all got involved in 10 or 11 or 12 years ago led to today, to you? I'm jealous. I want to work for you actually and do some of the things that you're doing. But let's tell people you're responsible for the whole cybersecurity posture of the entire business spanning Fox Sports, Fox News, and Fox Entertainment. You also lead merger and acquisition efforts. You identify areas for investment of the company. You work with their expansion into NFTs and different crypto. You were involved in the Masked Singer launching its token gated experience, which is like super cool. You were involved with building out the platform's architecture to stream the Super Bowl 2020, which broke like all previous records for video and for streaming and for 4K and things like that. You're the executive sponsor of Fox Women in Technology and on the Fox Technology Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council. This is probably one of the longest intros I've ever put together, but there's so much, and there's nothing that needs to be unsaid. You work with partners included like WWE, Dolly Parton, The Masked Singer, and others to reimagine like what this creator, fan, and community experience with an entertainment is going to do. And you've also done, like before that, you did some of the coolest things is you consulted with governments around the world, designed military and strategy war games. And we could literally do a whole episode on that because I'm just so curious. But at the same time, you're probably wondering why I'm so excited about talking to you today. And I think the reason is that for the last 350 episodes or so, most of our guests are already building from the crypto side of things. What you're doing is working directly. You're the last mile, if you will, when it comes to the viewer. And so on these shows that we've had in the past, I'm constantly talking about we have to reimagine how people are going to watch and engage with not just on demand, but with broadcast shows, live shows by using this Web3 technology. You know, it's great to like kind of talk in my echo chamber of all crypto companies, but here I am talking to you and you're in broadcast. You are broadcast. You are video on demand. And sometimes we lose sight of things and we feel like that what we're doing with Web3 and NFTs and Bitcoin and crypto is like a niche internet fad. But here you are reimagining this whole world of how we consume media through like a Web3 lens. And like, that's really exciting.
Well, that was such a nice intro. Thank you, Charlie. Yeah, I think, you know, taking a step back, you know, we got into this business of like starting Blockchain Creative Labs really when myself and I was running, as you noted, streaming infrastructure and cybersecurity, which I still do, and just general engineering efforts for the company. And I was kind of watching, call it early 2020, what was happening with NFTs a little bit. And then my partner, who I didn't know at the time, but we kind of came together through the two people in Fox talking about how we need to get involved in this. And he runs our animation studio. And so it was like the two of us coming from two totally different angles, like him from the creative angle with, you know, animation, and me from the technology angle, where I had been essentially, like, as I, you think about streaming the World Cup, the World Series, the Super Bowl, like these are the things that my team, their platform was delivering. But a lot of the biggest headaches, you know, often can end up being kind of with these like gatekeepers of technology, right? We're trying to get our stream into the television sets of like all of America, or we're trying to get them onto the apps that Americans increasingly are using instead of going, you know, directly through cable. And just a lot of pain where you see like the gatekeepers in tech are shifting, or in some cases are the same and are entrenching themselves. And so I just kind of, there's this like unlock of like, this is actually, it's a disintermediation for how creators, at Fox, we have like a kind of a big tent of creators, right? Everything from news to sports, to entertainment. And each of these creators have their own passionate communities. You know, how can we bring those two closer and disintermediate like the people who essentially are abstracting and owning our audience? And if you think about the how consumer behavior is changing, like consumers, I think increasingly don't want to have this abstracted experience where all their data is owned by a handful of companies who are controlling what, you know, what content they're allowed to see, under what circumstances, what they're being promoted. You're trying to direct content. And for me, and I think this is like also kind of a more core crypto ethos from previously, it's like we don't need these, this like, I think it's like a, it's not, censorship is like an extreme version of it, but it's also like kind of directionally correct. Like you don't need this layer to tell you what content to watch. So I think that's how we got into this space, and we decided to really go all in. As you noted, like we have a whole business unit that's, you know, about 90% engineering that is building the technology for how we think the future of Hollywood should work. And how the future of content financing is going to work, the future of distribution, and the future of monetization, where creators own more of the puzzle.
Everything that you just said, especially the latter part of it, is the dream. But how do we get there? And I'm actually curious to know how some of like the ideas that you guys have and being part of this like huge organization that has so many different arms and tentacles, how like things out, how actually like ideas go from like the idea stage to actually, you know, launching something like a, you know, involving like an NFT and streaming of the Super Bowl next year or something like that, like spanning that entire organizational like kind of process. And I'm just curious about that. But the future of Hollywood, I guess the problem is, and you can help me answer this, is we don't know what the viewer wants at the end of the day, because they don't even understand crypto and the relationship between like the viewer at the end of the day and crypto. And I agree with identity, and there's all like keeping the customer and keeping the viewer and being able to do things with them. There's all these different people that are trying to do like, you know, proof of watch. Like if you're watching something, you can earn tokens, but that, you know, I tried to do something like that too, but how do you actually build that out? There are all these ideas that just simply can't work because you don't know what the viewer wants. So are you going to risk kind of like the bread and butter of the business to try something new? Where is the line drawn?
Yeah, I think we're lucky that Fox is a pretty risk-taking business. And since the concepts at the top were, I think, so resonant that even if, and I think the labs part of the name was fairly descriptive, because I think it was like I kind of assumed that some of our first forays were not necessarily going to be, you know, the immediate successes, right? Like there's this view that we're on this long run. And it was kind of interesting to see, like, even when crypto downturn or FTX implosion or all these like macro things are happening, like our view like doesn't really waver, which I think shows like how the fundamentals are what is interesting to our executive team, and a recognition that it was like a multi-year project that we need to really set the foundation for. And so, you know, our first project was The Masked Singer. That was like 4 months after we were founded, our largest show on television. It's the number one unscripted show.
I love that show, by the way.
For us, we just like, we're trying to find a show that we thought had like some of the right ingredients. The show is obviously super wacky, creatively quite interesting. We thought we could do something good with art. And at the time, you know, this is 2020, collectibles kind of thing, like a fun thing to do. We've moved on from that view. So we launched with that, and within 2 weeks, we drove like a 250,000 wallets. And that was like all first timers.
Million wallets, first timers.
And our target audience for Masked Singer is a 52-year-old woman in Ohio. Yeah. So we were trying to design for her, you know, and I think through that experience, we saw like, oh, wow, like this is painful, right? What are all the friction points for an average user? All of our user testing was like, no one knew what was happening, right? And so and we had a lot of internal debates about, well, how much do you want to abstract away for a user? Versus for a while, I was kind of leaning into it. I was kind of running around saying friction is freedom. Like we should actually
friction
talk
is
about
freedom. I've never heard that in my life.
I like to compare it to like Amazon one-click shopping, which like is as easy as if possible, but like has a lot of negative externalities, right? And so we're not doing one-click shopping, but because you're getting all these benefits, right? But I think it was clear, I was a bit wrong, I think, on this initially, because the value proposition wasn't clear enough to justify the friction, right? So we had to really lean into how do we smooth that experience for the users to bring them into the ecosystem. And that was, and we did voting and these things that were more true to the show itself. And I think we tried to draw a little bit of our history. Like Fox likes has this internal story they like to tell about how we taught America how to text with America Idol. You know, and at the time, you know, Ryan Seacrest, like teaching people like how to press buttons on their phone to text.
Oh my God, I remember those days. Yeah, like texting. But I remember that some of the earlier seasons of American Idol, I had to call to vote.
Yeah. And the text to vote was a massive innovation, right? And it was, that was like this whole smoothie, but there was a such clear value proposition. And if you think about how Ryan Seacrest approached it at the time, he didn't talk about like SMS as a breakthrough technology, right? It was no, now you can use your phone to vote to impact air. And so the value proposition was there. So that's been inspirational to us too, where it's like people care about the what's, I care about the how and why. Like, I think the freedom is super important, but maybe we don't need to actually, I think it's a lesson for us. Like we actually needed to bias towards getting people into the ecosystem, proving to them that it was worth it to be there. And then, you know, taking them on the journey
into crypto land,
getting deeper and deeper into it. And, you know, we've now launched 9 projects, I think on 3 different blockchains. We've used 4 different default wallets. We've gone through 5 payment providers. We're working with all these parties too, because they are excited about, you know, having their technology potentially in front of millions of people, right, that we can activate on. Like the Masked Singer, we have on-air promotion every Wednesday. So it's a, like last night, we had on-air promotion of, you know, participating in a Web3 experience. But there's this recognition of a lot of rough edges. And that's a lot of what we're working on now, essentially, is what is that, you know, and I think we have now like a pretty decent stack for the normies, but, you know, a lot of the people who still show up today are degens.
You talk about like value proposition, and what it sounded like you were saying is that at heart, you're a Bitcoiner, and the ethos of what it means to be a Bitcoiner, like you were saying, friction is freedom, censorship resistance, sound money, being able to own your data and not have anyone be able to monetize off of that. If I had to write like a constitution of what it meant to be a Bitcoiner, I mean, we've done shows where we've literally talked, ich bin ein, you know, Bitcoiner, like after the Kennedy famous speech. We're like all navigating in this crypto world, right? Like you said. So do you have to separate what the value propositions of what crypto are to you, because they may not be there yet, versus like what the value propositions for crypto for everyone else is right now?
Yes. I mean, I think I've learned to do that. But if you take like in the long run, if the paths converge, right? So I think as long as we take a long enough view today, if I really want to optimize for millions of wallets, which is a goal, like millions of wallets who are engaging across our experiences, then I'm not going to get there by talking to the Fox fan about, you know, freedom, right? We're going to get there by talking about how you can be a part of Dan Harmon's show and be written into the show by participating in the experience. You can vote on what's going to happen with the Masked Singer. You can show up to USFL games and actually meet your favorite player. These are the value propositions that fans care about. And then I think increasingly we realize too, like it's actually less targeting the fan, which we've kind of had a very fan focus, but increasingly we're targeting, I think, more of the creator ecosystem. And okay. I think that's a view that that might be a more scaled way to get the fans, right? Because the fans will follow the creators that they love. So a lot of our new initiatives are more kind of platform-based, where it's how can we have the power of the Fox distribution? Like, we can get people out there, which I think is a superpower for us as we are, you know, being able to, you know, talk to creators. And how can we, like, have them, people, these creators who are interested in this technology, interested in activating their fans, want different economics than many streaming services give them, where increasingly they do not get a piece of the upside. They increasingly are flat fee deals. They don't have, they don't end up with the deals that actually allow them to have breakout
financial moments. I know all too well about that. My wife's, we've been podcasting the show for 4 years, but my wife's an actor. So she's been doing all these movies and I'm like, well, I want to make a movie. Let's make a movie together. Like, let's put a piece of art together. So we made this romantic comedy and everyone on the show knows that I've been talking about Ask Me to Dance forever. And we're lucky because we worked with XYZ Films and we ended up selling it. So it's on like Apple TV and Amazon. And the deals suck. But the deals are terrible. In the long tail, we'll make money, but it's like, we're lucky. Most movies never will.
Yeah.
Especially in the independent world with the end of the DVD. Once the DVD died, as I'm learning, the lost ability for the creator to resell his work over and over and over again to fans, to super fans. And then that financed the whole independent. That's what you saw amazing, some of those amazing movies we saw came out of, like, you know, some independent, like Fox has independent studios too, and some of the sub $5 million budget movies. But if the financing is impossible, the incentives are all out of whack. And because of that, the creators end up making the least amount of the money. And that disincentivizes people from being able to make like such amazing content. And I don't know how you change that, because even with this film, this was a 2-year project from script to production and everything and release. And we were lucky we had a theatrical release in about 50 different cities, like during COVID, right? We're probably the only movie to see in theaters like a year ago. I guess my question is, it needs to come from someone like you. It needs to come from the top down. And so what are you guys prepared to do to change that?
Well, I have a bit of a dream that you think about Hollywood waterfall being on chain.
Yes. Let's put the waterfall on chain, the caps. You know, I tell people that every day. I'm literally right. I wrote a white paper for that, a purpose pill. We'll talk later. But yes, the waterfall.
Me.
I need to see your waterfall and how it changed. For those who don't know, like when you invest in a film or create, the waterfall is basically like for the every dollar that comes in once the film is made, who gets paid first, how the waterfalls, if you will, how people get paid. And so even if you do have equity as an actor or a creator, it's going to be like you have the financing, the tax credit loan, then you have the financing loan, then you have probably went over budget, so they had to borrow against the whole film. So they're getting their money first, and then probably had to borrow from someone else. So they're getting their money first. And everyone's got like 30% upside before you get anything. So it's like, how do you change that?
I mean, part of it, I think the transparency of it, of being on chain, is actually pretty interesting. I mean, a lot of creators tell us the only way they get paid is when they sue. Because in that complexity, there's a lot of room for bad behavior. I think, I mean, again, it's kind of back to like some crypto principles, but if you have like a centralized, like God knows who, like bankers who are determining all these flows, it's just it's totally black box. And so I think just the transparency piece of it is really powerful. And then the second piece is like the line of incentives, which you talked about. I mean, one thing Fox has is we have the largest AVOD service, advertising video on demand. So it's a free service. So I think increasingly in this economic climate, it's actually killing right now because people are, you know, looking for ways to
get
content.
That's why Tubi's blowing up too.
Yeah, so Tubi, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, you guys own Tubi. There you go. I didn't even know that. I love Tubi.
So Tubi, you know, is you know, that's who we're working with on this initiative. And, you know, it's an advertising platform. And so it's pretty clear actually how much revenue is driven by each title, unlike with other, you know, other like SVOD services where you're like, how much did Bridgerton drive Netflix revenue? It's like, it's a little complex. But in the case of Tubi, it's like, it's actually quite clear how much advertising each title generates. And so I think there's this way to really align incentives. A creator can get their community to show up, help finance the production. We see there's actually a community there. We're willing to call it match it, green light it, distribute it on Tubi, and then have proceeds be transparently put on chain. And a portion of that go back to you know, the original pool, like these kind of micro studios that we're calling them, where you can have now fans who are thinking about that flywheel of content. And the creator now has like a sustainable flywheel. That's the crazy thing too. It's like, you can even have a creator kind of an amazing breakout film. And then film two, as you might, if you're in the situation, it's like, you're basically starting from scratch,
yeah,
right? In terms of lining up financing, you know, all the things that you need to do. So we think there's a way to have this like interesting like micro flywheels to have a more sustainable income stream for creators, yeah, kind of using this underlying technology and having, in this case, then the creators are basically activating their fans. And that might be a more scaled way for if we provide that infrastructure to get even more people into this ecosystem.
I'm really excited that this podcast, The Charlie Shrem Show, is now powered by Waxman. I think I met the CEO, David Waxman, back in 2015 or something at an Ethereum meetup. And he told me that the future belongs to the fearless. And that is why they are producing the show right by my side. What an amazing team we have now. It's so amazing. You guys have been hearing some great updates, have been following along. If you don't know, Waxman is the leading global strategy and communications firm advising the next generation of companies in Web3, disruptive technology, Bitcoin, crypto, fintech, artificial intelligence, and venture capital. Waxman's clients are ambitious leaders and businesses that are on the frontier of this whole new economy because they really do believe that the future belongs to us and we're the ones building it. With services across everything from digital marketing, public relations, social media, investor relations, financial communications, recruiting, and public affairs, they're helping companies and individuals like myself seize the business opportunities that we deserve, overcome challenges that we all are going to face, and achieve sustained success. Head over to Waxman to learn more. You guys are going to love them. We have them in the show notes. Check it all out. It's WACHSMAN.com. That's WACHSMAN.com. So it's like from the get-go, when you're starting the project out, you're already drumming up support from friends and family. And if you're someone like an influencer, you can build up support from people that follow you and things like that. And so if there's some mechanism to like incentivize people, if it sounds like what you're saying from the get-go, and then the waterfall's on chain, then companies like Tubi would potentially work with those projects because they already have a following and you already know that Tubi gets advertising revenue. So it all works together really, really well.
Exactly.
So you're aligning all the incentives. That's very interesting.
Yeah. So these are the kind of experiments we're doing, as we're, again, trying to get more and more people into the ecosystem. And that's, both with Fox IP, where we can, talk about, I think that the biggest project we haven't talked about yet that we're doing is Krepopolis, which is our animated series with Dan Harmon. Do you know him from
Dan
Community
Harmon, yeah,
and Rick and Morty?
Yep.
And so he was actually the first thing we announced when we created this lab, but animation just takes so long. It's been now 2 years. The show is actually premiering on Fox next this coming year, but we launched an NFT project around it over a year in advance of the show airing. And these people are part of the show creation now. And so that, I think that's an example of us kind of in the middle ground where the show's already been greenlit by Fox. We actually have greenlit 3 seasons. That's how much Fox believes in the show, even though we've never aired an episode. So if you're an NFT collector, it's like, okay, well, Fox has already committed to 3 seasons of this thing being on air. This is not like a flash in a pan moment. And then by having a crap chicken, which lays eggs, a lot of fun stuff there, but you can have opportunity to be written into the show. The holder's been able to vote on like 10 things in the show so far. That's part of like shaping in some way, like the television that you'll see, like that will be the new, we think is the new, will be our next Simpsons, on air Sunday night prime time, and like the fans will have had a piece of like, they'll see some of their influence in there. And we think that's like increasing, like kind of where consumer behavior is going in way. And that consumers want to feel like they're part of something. They want to see their efforts reflected in it. They don't really want a broadcast experience, right? Where it's this like one to many, which is Fox's bread and butter, right? Pushing to millions of households in America. It's like, oh, it's like us actually opening up a little bit. How can we make it like a little bi-directional?
We haven't even talked about like GameFi yet or anything. Like you can create, complementary games for people across like all different platforms to play and tokenize that experience too. The good thing about what you're doing is that it's all under media and content creation. And that's great. So you don't like regulations and things like that. You don't even have to like think about. But we talked about putting the waterfall on chain. And then some regulators may see, hey, if you're selling an NFT and you potentially can get written into the show, could that be a security? Because there's value to that. Fox is some of the best lawyers in the world. Like, what are they telling you? What are the regulations going to look like when they come?
I wish I knew the exact.
No, I guess hypothetical. What do you think? Yeah,
it was a lot of uncertainty. And I say, obviously, given who we are, a publicly traded company, we are doing things on the right side, and we are getting, you know, the right. And we believe that's. I mean, I think in crypto could benefit. I think from parties who are thinking about this more broadly, you know, to do things in the right way. Like, we are holding our fans as. Like the consumers, like our fans are like the people that we always hold. Like we prioritize them over everyone, right? Which means occasionally you kind of piss off the degens who are expecting you to do something. Like, and that's like, I will take that. Like, I will take that heat, you know, because we are designing for the fans. That is what's going to drive long-term value. If you hold the fan in mind, you end up doing a lot of the right things, right? Like you're doing, because we're trying to make sure that these first-time crypto people are having a good experience. And so I think that naturally just leads to like the right behaviors. Then there's this edge. I mean, it's not really edge. It's kind of like we're at the edge of a lot of these things, like, you know, raising money from fans, potentially, you know, to, you know, again, having a lot of these utilities around the show. And, you know, we just are really, I think, quite careful about this. And we have, as you noted, like, you know, a robust team to help us work through those issues. And I think like everyone in the space, you know, we'd like to see like increasing clarity. So, you know, just to allow the whole economy to flourish even more.
Yeah, that'd be great. You think there would ever be like a Fox DAO?
You know, I think you might see one this summer.
Seriously? You know, what does that even look like, hypothetically speaking?
I mean, it probably won't be Fox DAO, but we're going to like experiment with this. Like, I think with the how we think about the like, it will be a micro experiment with it within a small portion of the enterprise. But you know, I think the governance piece of it, I think it's just like, I mean, we look at projects like Nouns that we're really inspired by, and some others, and thinking like, you know, there's a lot to draft off of. I think that a lot of the Web3 degen. Yeah. Communities are building and have shown for like particularly around governance that we're inspired by, you know, and like thinking about how some of that stuff could work with some of our creators, I think is quite interesting.
This is all like, you know, it's complementary and it extremely like increases the awesomeness of like the viewer relationship, the fan relationship, people involved love it. Everyone, no one doesn't love what we're doing and what you're doing. When you talked about like text to voting on that American Idol, and I like as that growing up in that age, I distinctly remember voting for my favorite American Idol. Like, was it Ruben Studdard or Clay Aiken or whatever it was? And I distinctly remember, I forget which season it was, but that changed where you were forced to vote over text, or it was like right there on the splash screen. And that was like a pivotal watershed moment. I probably in textbooks will write about how that change the way the world looked at cell phones. Like, that will be written in textbooks. When will that moment be for crypto? Like, when will we see that same banner where you talked about friction is freedom? I love that. We need to add a little bit of friction maybe in order to show people freedom. That's what I'm thinking. So like SMS created some friction, but it also changed the world. What friction is necessary in order for us to get to that moment for crypto?
Well, it's funny because you imagine the builders of SMS as a technology. I've been on their bingo card. They did not think Ryan Seacrest is going to be the breakthrough moment for us on this technology, right? And so that's our hypothesis too. Like, I don't know exactly what's going to be the breakthrough moment for consumers, but that's one reason to run a whole lot of experiments right now. Like, okay, we have sporting things going, animation fans, unscripted television, creators. You know, there's some method to the madness, right? Where I don't think you can just like throw stuff at a wall and see what sticks, but it's more like, okay, this actually seems to have some traction. Let's like double down on this idea. Okay, this is actually seems to not be working at all. Like, let's kind of pull back, and we need to have a different value proposition and like seeing what people are actually willing to show up for. And we've learned so much, you know, like I've there's so much about like where, and I think we had this also realization that, you know, things have not happened as fast as I might have predicted. I think a lot of that has to do with macro. I mean, 2 years ago, it's like probably all of us could see like, oh, this is the moment. It's happening, right? And it wasn't, right? It's still a longer burn. And a lot of the macro stuff didn't help, obviously. Just I think people who like might have been interested or like maybe pulled back, you know, it's like it just got, there's like a little air of like scariness of like, okay, I'm just a little too scared to jump in right now. There's like still like a little bit too much scam stuff that goes on for the average consumer, right? There's just like a little unsafe, right? And like I run trust and safety at Fox. That's probably my cyber jobs. Like I think about safety of users a lot. And it's hard. Like we feel like we have a responsibility to our fans if we're going to onboard them to create a safe experience. But as you know, it's like, it's still, there's a lot of rough edges. So I think in terms of when or, you know, what's going to be the breakthrough moment, I don't know what that, I know it's going to have to be driven by utility. It's going to be around, and not utility in the way that NFT projects talk about it, but like actual, this unlock.
Yeah.
And like, and one thing I think is like, the like Hollywood, like revenue on chain is like, that for me is like a transformational unlock for creators. So, and that's not like a marginal, like marketing shtick, fun, you know, collectible thing potentially, but like it is a really transformative thing that uses the technology in a way that's unlocked an entirely new economic opportunity set. So I think it's going to be, I think, those bigger things. But in the meantime, like we can get more people into the ecosystem, learn from them, see what resonates, you know, by actually talking to them through all the IP that they love, that they trust. And so they're willing to kind of take that leap of faith and get into the ecosystem and learn a little bit more.
So what type of data are you looking at? So you're not throwing things at the wall to see what sticks. Like, how do you know when you're sitting and you know, we're just discussing all these ideas, what data do you have access to that you could kind of look at to know whether an idea is like, remember, like we were talking about some of the processes of like a mega organization like Fox. How do you get that idea from to like the next step? How do you know if it's worth it?
And there's a few key things we look at. I mean, we look at wallets, like how many wallet installs did this experience drive? Like
did people
see like the call to action to come in here, the QR code that it's on every Wednesday night on television to like scan to claim. Do people participate in that? At USFL, we're on the Jumbotrons of every game. That's the United States Football League, an upstart football league that we own. You know, the scan to claim, right? So we see like that drives wallets, because usually for most people, if they don't have a wallet, which the vast majority of our users don't, then they're put through like a wallet creation flow. So wallets are a big one. I mean, another one's claims. We do a lot of free claims, I think, just to get people into the ecosystem. So, you know, hey, you can have a fan pass. Like for Masked Singer, it's a default free experience. You know, you can have an experience, you can join the experience for free. So how many people claim something for free? Then we have like an upsell, right? We have the Masked Singer Star, you know, which is, you know, gets you access to like all behind the scenes content. We have a kind of a token gated video room and an ability to like climb leaderboards and win. We have token gated merch store and stuff. So that's a sale. So it's, you know, I think with the whole funnel, like how many people create a wallet, actually claim an NFT, buy an NFT, and then what does engagement look like on the site? So on Crapopolis, you can vote. You can participate in scavenger hunts, you know, to win prizes. You can like spend your eggs, which are our ERC-20s in the platform, on trait upgrades, on merch, on, you know, these things. So how are people participating in those? Like from an engagement standpoint, are they finding this ecosystem, you know, compelling? And then we think about the audience from like, I mean, this is kind of dumb Web2 stuff, but how many people are following us on Twitter? How big is our Discord community? Like how many people are like broadly in the tent? I mean, wallets are like kind of the numero uno for me. It's like, are we actually bringing people into this ecosystem? Because we can drive that direct relationship with the fan. We know we can unlock, maybe today they're not ready to buy the NFT. They're not ready to like transact, but we have a foundation for the future.
Going back 13 years, when I first got involved in Bitcoin, before crypto was even a thing, before Ethereum was invented, when Bitcoiners, we were just like hanging around in chat rooms and internet forums, you know, bothering Satoshi and asking him questions and stuff like that. A lot of conversations led to what you just said and eventually leading to mass adoption of wallet growth and people being able to have freedom and that watershed moment. We're not there yet, but it sounds like we're awfully close. I had one of the first Bitcoin exchanges called BitInstant in 2011, and my goal was to get Bitcoin in the hands of as many people as possible, because I knew that although we don't know what the value proposition is yet of Bitcoin and crypto, I knew that we just, like you said, we just need to onboard people and bring them on and bring them on. And when I founded the Bitcoin Foundation in 2013, that was the point of it, was just we were running around speaking to people around the world, connecting various early Bitcoin communities. You're making me like reflect on my life in the crypto world. And then when Bitcoin became money in 2013, and then I spent 18 months in prison, I didn't think that Bitcoin and crypto, I wasn't sure what the future was. I was debating whether to even, like, what would be my job in the industry? Would the industry look at me again as like someone that they would want to lead it again? Because I shamed the industry by falling so hard in 2014. And when I got out, my friend who ended up founding Ethereum offered me a job as running the first multi-coin wallet, which was called Jax. So I was the COO of that wallet. Everyone would ask me, Charlie, what other coins are people holding? Why would people hold other coins? Why do you care about adding so many different blockchains and coins to this wallet when most people are just going to only want Bitcoin? I mean, but we knew that there would be a value proposition, that we knew that something would come of it. And you've connected so many dots for me today. Really, I really harbor back on that. Like, it is okay to add a little bit of friction to give people some freedom. And I'm going to really make that my life goal over the next year, because one of the things I do is part of a VC fund is mentor entrepreneurs that we invest in. They seem to think that unless the user interface is perfect and is frictionless, then that's the only way to launch something. But I'm saying, no, it's okay to teach people the importance of crypto in order for us to get to the next level. So thank you for that. And thank you for coming on the show today. Sorry, I had to like data dump a little bit to you there.
Well, I love that. Yeah, and I think the question is, like, where does the friction actually make a difference, where you actually maybe can insert it to a point where the consumer can say, okay, like, this is different. You know, and for me, it's like sign up maybe is not the place. Like asking a random user to participate in the Messenger to like write down a 16-word phrase, that might be like insurmountable friction to get started. But one thing we're doing, for example, is actually asking people to sign transactions in order to view content. Like, okay, we want to check that you own this thing in order to see the content. And we had a debate, like, is that too high friction? Like signing a transaction, is an average user going to believe in that? But that for me is an example, like where the friction is worth it, because you're actually bringing people on a journey. If you believe in the future of the signed web, which I do, you know, where there's going to be, you know, content you're going to trust, is a whole other rabbit hole, you know, it's going to have to be signed. Otherwise, you're not going to trust it, which I think is where deepfake tech is going. Then it's worth it now to get people into that habit of signing a transaction in order to do something online. I think but you don't know what those points are. It's going to be a lot of experiments to see where is it worth it.
But that's okay, because most people are like used to like needing notaries for important types of transactions. So like we're used to signing and being able to have like a third party trust or whatever.
Certainly lower friction than a notary. Yeah. So
yeah. Oh my, even I can't believe it's like online notaries is the future of notary. And let me tell you, I think the job of a notary is very important, because without notaries, then forging documents would be a lot more rampant and things like that. So it's very important, but like there needs to be a better mechanism, maybe some like crypto notarization. I don't know.
Yeah. I haven't thought about this use case particularly, but it does feel like there's a lot of room for improvement from status quo. But yeah, I'm with you. I think you want to get fans. It's a line to draw. How do you get the fans today into the ecosystem so you can build with them? But then how do you also have these teachable moments, you know, to not abstract away everything? Right? To not have it be purely social sign-on and you have no idea that you have a wallet, you have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. I think our consumers deserve like a little bit more transparency into what's going on under the hood, because eventually they'll care. But it's drawing those lines, because the other analytics we look at is like, where do people drop off? And people drop off when they create wallets, you know? So that's the, that's that we have to like, that tension that we have to hold. And we're running like a bunch of A/B tests across all of our properties to see what works and what's the right balance for the user.
So cool. So cool. Melody, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Charlie. I appreciate it too.